Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. This is part two.
Part two
of the invasion episode. If you haven't listened to part one, stop, go listen to part one, and then come back, and we can get right back into it. But make sure that you are all caught up on part one because it's important.
Another one.
Was that Thor?
God did. Oh. I was just talking DJ Khaled quotes.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, so we're going to start with everybody's favorite segment, Living in Shondaland.
Living in Shondaland!
Christmas, Christmas time is here.
Oh.
Beautiful. The remix.
What is your favorite Christmas song?
I really
That was
like...
a DJ Khaled Christmas version, by the way.
The one that they sing in Charlie Brown...
The one they sang or the piano song?
No, the one that they like yell. Christmas time.
Oh, that's right.
And then I really like the War is Over.
Snoopy versus the Red Baron?
No.
Or nope, you're thinking of John Lennon.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm thinking of there's a Snoopy versus the Red Baron.
No,
song.
I know what you're talking about. I'm a Peanut stan.
But when you said War is Over, I went to that as opposed to like I refer to that song as Happy Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But then in parentheses, War is Over.
There's also those are like classic Christmas songs. There's also several like pop Christmas songs that I really love. Like there's the Katy Perry one.
I don't know if I know the Katy Perry one.
That was perfect.
There was not a single word better. about Christmas in that version that you just sang.
And then the Ariana Grande, obviously, Santa Tell Me. Santa Tell Me if he will
Oh
be
yeah,
here.
That song's a fucking bop.
If he will be here next year. And then there's like a Joe Bro one.
We can't talk about Christmas without talking about Mariah Carey also.
Well,
we need to
I don't like that song. I just don't care for that song. I do not care for Mariah Carey as a human being. I think she is talented, but my personal interactions with her were wildly negative. So I don't like her.
That's fair. Also, we cannot talk about Christmas without talking about Dominic the Italian Christmas Donkey.
Don't know who that is.
You don't know the song?
I don't think I know the song.
Oh my God. It's literally, it goes ching-a-dee-ching, hee-haw, hee-haw, it's Dominic the Donkey.
Why is that a thing?
Because it's the Italian Christmas Donkey, Kelsey.
Okay. Is this like Little Sebastian?
Bye-bye, Little Sebastian. Catch your dream.
Also,
we watched
the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special last week, and yep. Michael hated it. I did not think it was that bad.
It was not that bad.
It was infinitely better than the Star Wars one.
Everything that has ever been created in the history of consumable media content is better than the Star Wars Christmas special.
That is arguably correct.
They needed subtitles. That's all. That's all they needed. Write some sort of dialogue.
Yeah, just like anything. Anyways, okay. Shondaland.
Living in Shondaland.
This is a hefty one. We have six friends in Shondaland today.
Is that six friends that are not our four new doctors?
Some of them are the new doctors, but not all four of the new doctors.
Okay. Here, out of the four new doctors, my official guess, which will be Shondaland guesses, is Reed and Jackson are the only two regular people that we will see on the show.
On Grace? Or, I'm sorry, what did you, like, you're saying that those, okay.
That they, the other two, because if they're living in Shondaland, they're probably not going to be regulars.
I'm so sorry. What do you think I said about Shondaland?
That out of the four new doctors, that some of them are included in living in Shondaland.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Which leads me to believe that they're not going to be mainstays on the show. Ah, fuck you, Kelsey. Gosh,
damn. I'm making vague faces, everybody.
Okay. All right. Jackson and Reed are my two guesses because I believe that they'll probably be leveraged in some sort of private practice crossover because I believe that they will be the most important of the four people we just met today.
Okay. Is there a reason those are my first... think those two are the most important? I'm just curious. Like, it was, what was it about them that stood out to you that would make them the most important?
So Jackson caused the least amount of waves with Christina, and Hunt seems to like him right off the bat. And then Reed being the most attractive of the group will just be on the show because she's attractive.
Okay.
If we're losing someone like Katherine Heigl, they're going to want to add another attractive female to the show, was my guess.
I see what you're saying.
I'm thinking of this from like a logistic standpoint.
I see what you're saying. From the behind the scenes side.
Yeah. Also, Charles, we've got enough white men in the show. So those are my thought processes, but also those were the two that I liked the most. So I'm really hoping they just keep them.
Okay. So there's six people in Shondaland. So how do you want to go about guesses?
Let's start with Reed
and Jackson.
Reed and Jackson are my first two guesses. Are either of them correct?
Jackson is correct.
Reed is not. Okay. All right. So April. And Charles. Wow. Fuck. Okay. All right. So we're out of that. Okay. So let's go into the next one. So obviously Kidney Girl, because she's going to be with Bailey in private practice, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then we have two more. Mm-hmm. Two more. And my guess is the 19-year-old girl.
Yes, very good.
And she was attractive, so I figured she would be put somewhere else in some TV show. And Billy.
No. Dang. I was convinced Billy was. I like combed through his IMDb like four times because I was like, this man is so familiar.
Is it the guy who the 19-year-old girl was involved with or her dad?
No.
No to both? Who else is fucking in this show? HR lady.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. There we go. Okay.
Okay. So this episode, Shondaland. really fucks with like the universe building of Shondaland in a lot of ways. So we'll go through it first. So Robert Baker plays Charles. He's in one episode of Scandal. Sarah Drew plays
I remember that actually. I feel like I remember that.
Sarah Drew plays April. She is in two episodes of Private Practice that we have already seen. Do you remember the pregnant girl and Dell is like, and she's like, I'm thinking of adoption. And then Dell is like,
yes,
that's her.
Whoa. Plastic surgery.
And now she's like here as a
not that same person.
In the same universe.
Got it.
And so then Alexi Gilmore plays Sarah Fremont. And then she's in, obviously, one episode of Private Practice as the same character. Alexa, stop. She started listening to me because I said that.
Alexi. That's the Russian version of Alexa.
I know. and then
the 19-year-old girl.
The 19-year-old girl is in one episode of Station 19 as someone different, obviously. And Jesse Williams, who plays Jackson, is in seven episodes of Station 19 as Jackson.
So
that's kind of a spoiler, but whatever. It's there.
Yeah. So that 19-year-old girl looked like kind of a standard market version of Katie Holmes.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, we're getting Jackson. Sorry. Jackson's going to be a regular. Okay.
And then we have the Missy Grant, the HR lady, Frida Foshen. And she is in one episode of How to Get Away with Murder and one episode of Private Practice.
Same person in Private Practice? Is she also HR? No? Okay.
She's a different person. So, again.
So, two of the three Private Practice people are different humans in the same universe.
Yes, and one of the two Station 19 people is a different person in the same universe.
Who is the other Station 19 person?
The 19-year-old in Jackson.
That's right. Wow. Look at that. Well, that was a good episode of Shondaland. I was like,
this might be the most we've ever had.
Probably.
Yeah.
Because even the episode...
We may have had five before, but I don't think we've ever had six.
The episode with the ladies and the husbands in the limousine.
Yeah.
That may have been a big episode. Basically, when all the big traumas happened. But remember when they had the high school episode or the kids were going to college and they got hit by a bus and there was like seven of them and it was only one Shondaland?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty wild. That was a high miss ratio. This was a high hit ratio. So Billy looks like the kind of person who is like a pretty like traditionally attractive guy who could have been used for those shows, though.
Yeah, I agree. So. And he just kind of looked familiar.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
When you burgle that many people, though.
Yeah.
Start to get recognized. All right. So,
That's Shondaland.
Did we talk really about the Fremont lady, the kidney lady?
We talked about the implications from what Izzy did. We didn't really talk about a lot other than that, but I mean, there's not really much else.
There's not really much else to talk about. Yeah. Yeah.
Other than Bailey is invested and she's like, I'm going to fix this.
Let's talk through the patients. And then I think the second half of this episode, we got to spend some time talking about our favorite new attending in
Callie. Yeah, I was about to say, I've got a lot to say about Callie and her dad.
About Callie. Are they just calling it Seattle Grace Mercy West Hospital?
Yeah.
couldn't they have any creative Seattle Grace Mercy West Hospital?
And it's a fucking mouthful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Okay. So kick us off with the patient that Christina and Jackson have.
You guys, this is gross. I don't care if she's legally an adult. This is fucked up. This is gross. This is disgusting. This is grooming. This is nasty. Okay, so these two men come in. One of them has been stabbed by the other one because it's Don and, what's the other one's name?
Frank.
Don and Frank. Okay. So Don was the one that got stabbed, right?
No. Don's the dad of the 19-year-old
Frank
daughter.
Frank is the one that got stabbed. Frank and Don are like BFFs. We're going to say mid to late 40s, at least. Don is mad because Frank has been sleeping with his 19-year-old and he is like, I'm in love with her. That's disgusting. They have known each other for years. Don says she used to babysit your kids. That's disgusting. I am not opposed to age differences. I don't think like when you are an adult, it's that big a deal. But this much at this stage, the frontal cortex is not fully developed until a person is 25 years old. I understand that 18, you're legally an adult, but there are still things that are gross, and this is gross. He knew her growing up as a child. That's yucky. It's just yucky, and it's, I'm not a fan.
Wait, the frontal cortex of your brain isn't developed until you're 25?
No, it's like developing constantly until you're 25.
Isn't there a celebrity that stops dating people at the age of 25?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, okay. We're just going to go out and say it. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. That's, yeah. But that's clicking to me as you're saying that, because this episode is very nasty. Also, here's what I'm going to say about this topic. If there's an age difference, yes, that's fine. We get it. We see it. In this show, it's even portrayed with Mark and Lexi. Mm-hmm. And did we decipher that it was out of the half your age plus seven range?
I think it is, yeah, because she says she's 24, and I think he's 40-something. But she's less than 27, so.
So, again, fine, two consenting adults. Here's my beef with this situation. He knew this person before they turned 18. As a child, that's disgusting.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not cool.
Okay, I'm going to get some... I have two soapboxy moments in this episode, and this is going to be the first one.
Let's do it.
There is a lot of misuse of the term grooming that gets thrown around in the media, specifically the right-wing media. What grooming actually is, the reason it's important to be used correctly is because people, especially young people, need to know what it actually is to look out for. A lot of times right-wing media uses the term grooming as like existing as a gay person around youth. And that's not what grooming is. And that's fucked up to say that. They also basically imply that all gay people are groomers. And that is also fucked up and untrue. Grooming is when you as an adult are like basically establishing trust and a relationship with someone who is not an adult, so that when they do become an adult, they're basically going to be like, well, I already love you. You've made me feel so special and all this stuff. It's very yucky. It's inappropriate. A lot of celebrities have done it and just still get to be celebrities. Drake has done it multiple times and he just still gets to be a celebrity. It's gross. No one addresses it. It's yucky. I don't care for it. And it's just, I think it's so important to use that term correctly, because children need to know what they're actually like on guard for, like children and young adults, and also parents of children or just adults who are ever around children, so that they can see the signs and put a stop to it when it happens. This in this episode to me is an example of grooming. Obviously, we don't get a lot of backstory on this man and like when he divorced his wife, you know, when all this started. But to have known someone when they are very, very young and then to date them like the second they are legally an adult is gross.
Yeah.
And also, I'm like, it's just, it's yucky. It's just like, it's bad. And yeah. What's going on with you as an adult that you can't find any other adult that will date you? You have to date a 19-year-old. And I understand that legally 19-year-olds are adults, but like everyone, let's think about being 19. Like you still are like so impressionable. It's easy to take advantage of people that young, especially when you're someone they have looked up to for a long time. So you already have the trust. It's established. It's just taking advantage, and it's gross.
Yeah. I'm glad
Sorry
that we took
to be
this
a negative
time.
Nancy, but that's how I feel.
And I would also say that the age difference thing. So like if you're 60 and that puts you at 37 years old.
Yeah.
60 dating a 31-year-old, 60 dating a 29-year-old. Again, different things. And also situations are different when you don't have a pre-existing relationship with the person before they turn 18. That's really the biggest thing for me. Everything that you talk about afterwards, again, even the Mark and Lexi storyline under that difference. And she, okay, technically if she's what, 24, 25, and they've been together for a little bit, whatever. It's just not, he didn't know her as a child.
Yeah.
That's just fucking gross.
Yeah. It is. I don't like it. It's yucky. It's gross. It's disgusting. Again, I think it's taking advantage of, and I'm sorry, like, I just think I understand in a lot of these scenarios and like age difference in general, there's nuance. And I don't mean to just group anyone in, say like anyone with an age difference is gross. And I also feel like it's portrayed a lot that it's only gross if it's a man doing it to a woman. But I feel very strongly that if it's the woman is the older person and it's like if it was a 40 something year old woman and a 20 something year old man, I would feel the same way. So I just want to like set the record straight. I understand it's portrayed more in media that the man is it's an older man dating a younger woman. It does happen both ways. And I feel like, and I'm saying again, I want to set this boundary, like not all age differences are grooming, but that's why I think it's important that like this word stops being misused and thrown around in a political agenda kind of way, because like it matters. People need to know what it actually is so they can help stop it and like keep people safe. And like, it's just gross. And it's taking advantage of young people who are impressionable and naive.
Yep.
And so that true. Is my first soapbox, and we will get to the second one later.
Is it Callie related? I hope it's Callie related.
It's more her dad related, but yes.
Yes. Oh, gosh, what a good episode for them. Hey, shout out to Meg. So I know that she's your favorite character, so I'm very excited. Please message us when you hear this. We could all talk about it. And also just shout out. She said that one of my songs is her new favorite song, and I keep forgetting to mention that.
Also, did you see her Instagram where she's drawing Jedi Knights as actual like traditional knights?
No.
It's a really she's done, I think, two or three, and it's a really cool series. Shout out Meg.
Was it on her story or
no, it's on her page.
Story? Is it on her story?
Stories.
what's
very talented.
What do they say in Brave? What's their whole thing?
If you could change your fate, would you?
Yeah.
That's not even close to the right accent.
It's your story. You got to go to the swamp and talk to Shrek.
Oh my gosh. What a good movie.
Great. All right. Also, I'm not an anti Shrek person. I'm a fan of Shrek. I was watching the scene in Bohemian Rhapsody where Michael Myers was telling them that that will never be a hit song. And he's basically talking like Shrek. And I'm like, I can't unsee this. All right. Anyways, it's shitty. They catch him. He stabs him. This is the Don Frank scenario is what causes the rift between Christina and Jackson
and Owen,
because it starts with is it right before this scene when Jackson's like, oh, we should zone. We zone where we come from.
Which they like they make that like they present that as though we're supposed to be mad at that. And I'm like, that's actually not a terrible idea.
No. Instead of everyone fucking fighting and bickering over for it when it comes in.
Just flailing about in the ER where it's really important to like be on top of things. But they kind of obviously Christina gets mad and she's like, well, that's stupid. And Owen's like, no, that's a good idea because it is a good idea.
Right.
And my only qualm with it is I'm like, maybe a little more clarity because they just like leave. And I'm like, well, you could maybe explain it to all the people that are going to be involved, like including nurses and everybody. But other than that, I'm like, yeah, that's a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
Because also then if someone isn't where they're supposed to be, you can really quick be like, you're supposed to be here. What are you doing?
You have left your zone, you dumb a-hole. Go back to your zone.
Yeah. So Christina has also already like told Meredith she doesn't know what she's fighting for. And Meredith says, you know, there will be another cardio god. Like, you just have to like keep practicing so that you're still doing surgery, all this stuff. So Christina is already like, and Meredith even tells Derek that she's depressed. Like fully, like Christina, so much of her identity is wrapped up in being a surgeon and like learning that it's really hard for like, it really impacts her just day-to-day life when she isn't getting that cup filled. And so this man comes in, the man who was stabbed, and Christina like saves him, acts very quickly and saves him, like stops the bleed, saves him in the ER right there. And then at some point, John gets a medical hammer and like charges Frank when his daughter shows up. He charges Frank and Jackson tackles him so that he doesn't hit Frank in the head with a hammer, which was the right thing to do. I don't think he should hit Frank in the head with a hammer, and I don't think anyone should let him.
Yes, correct.
So I will say it is good that Jackson stopped him. I also understand why Christina is mad because they're like, he saved my life. And she's like, I saved your life and you didn't thank me.
Yeah, and I'm still saving your life. I'm literally doing my job to save your life. Yeah,
I'm literally preventing you from bleeding to death exactly right now. And then later on, they realize that, like, the Mercy West people aren't eating lunch when they're all in the lunchroom. So they, Christina gets up and runs to the ER, and Frank has had some kind of bleed or
pseudo-aneurysm.
Situation. Yeah. So they're taking him to surgery, and Hunt takes Jackson because he was there. And Christina isn't. And Christina gets mad. And now I see both sides to this. I do wonder if it hadn't been Owen, if they would have taken Jackson or if they would have taken Christina. Because Christina has arguably been on this patient and working on this patient more that day. Christina makes a good point of being like, you go so far out of your way to, like, not quote unquote favor me that it's actually inhibiting my learning. So I do understand that argument, but I don't really know for a fact if that's why Owen did it, if Owen really did it because Jackson was there, or if Owen is going out of his way to, like, make sure people don't think that he's favoring Christina. So I definitely see why it piles onto Christina's, like, being upset. And that leads into the really good scene with Christina and Meredith, where Christina goes in and just starts crying, and Meredith is bedridden, so she can't get up and say anything to her. So she just, like, throws a tissue box onto the couch.
Across to the couch. Yeah.
And she's really upset, and she's, like, sobbing, and she is going on and on about, like, not knowing what she's fighting for, and she doesn't get to hold hearts anymore. She doesn't, like, she's, like, not learning. And she says, I miss Burke, and it's not about, I'm trying to find the exact thing, but it's,
yeah,
so,
I was really hoping you're gonna have the
good moment. I mean, Sandra Oh just fucking, like, crushes this. Okay. So Christina's, like, sobbing, and she finally kind of calms down enough, and she says, and Meredith says, what happened? Talk to me. Tell me what happened. And Christina says, nothing is happening to me. You know, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I'm chasing after surgeries I don't even care about. Do you know how long it's been since I held a heart in my hand, since I felt that joy, that rush? You know, I miss Burke. I miss him all day. It's not about the relationship or the sex. I miss every day he was here. I held hearts, and I got picked not because of favoritism, but because it was, like, it was right. And I learned and I felt seen. And now, you know what? I don't know what. I spent the entire day fighting, and I don't want to do it anymore. And it's so good. And she's just, like, sobbing and, like, gasping for air. And then Meredith says, come over here. And she, like, lays in the bed with Meredith, and Meredith comforts her. It's very cute.
So rarely do we get tears from Christina.
Yeah.
Really, so rarely do we get true emotion from Christina.
Yeah.
But since we lost George, and since that episode where she was laying in bed and had this exhale.
Yeah.
And she goes, George O'Malley is dead.
Yeah.
We've kind of been on this tipping point with Christina, this roller coaster, this precipice that is coming and leading up to this exact moment, because there's no, in her personal life, it was all wild. And obviously, you know, Christina and Meredith, they have the dark and twisties there. That's, you know, they're there for each other. They get it, whatever. But in her professional life, everything is bleeding over. And we don't have this learning. We don't have this growing. There's no growth. There's no upward trajectory. And over the last couple of episodes, was it last episode that she went to Weber and was like, just fucking cut me, dude.
Yeah.
If you're not going to get someone who can teach me and utilize my skills, that's fine. But cut me, because I don't want this shit.
Yeah.
So really great scene. Little bit of comedic relief when we have Meredith just, like, throwing the Kleenex box at her.
Yeah.
And then it is cute. I have no idea what show they're watching, but it's cute, and it's black old. And white. It's old. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think that Christina was being fair to the Mercy West people as well. Yeah. She's also not fair to most people.
Yeah.
But when you have scenes like this, you really understand where she's coming from. And it's not coming from a place of... The thing I like about Christina's character is it's never coming from a place of it's me versus you. It's it's me versus me so much that like, I just need you to stop your shit because this is a me thing. I can recognize that, but, like, I'm not upset
mm-hmm.
that someone else tackled a guy, or I'm not actually mad that what did she say at the lunch table? They tripped over the guy and now,
yeah,
or he pushed him and he tripped
did a leap
and now
and tripped over a guy.
Yeah. But it's coming from, I am not fulfilled because yeah. I can do all of yeah. these whip stitches onto a heart ventricle and blah, 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 all this stuff. And I'm not yeah. getting to do that. There's nothing to do with you. This is all me. Yeah. And that's the thing I like about Christina's character. So many times there's a pitting of a person, a character versus another character.
Mm-hmm.
And Christina will be mean to another character because of the internal.
Yeah.
Fight that she
well,
has.
And she
I just
like
it.
Her whole life has been about being a doctor, and she's still in the quest to do that, I guess. And so she wants to learn. That's all she wants. And so it's not even like, yeah, it's not really a me versus you, but it's also, I mean, I think it's easy for us to be like, this is Weber's fault. But I think in her world, there's not really anyone to blame. She's just like, I'm just not learning. But it's not like when Han was there and she wasn't teaching her. It's like, there's no one there to teach her. But I don't think she has anyone to blame. And she's like not fulfilled in that way. So it's just like really hard for her. And there's no, she doesn't have, you know, she's not like, there's nowhere to put the anger.
Yeah. So true.
So yeah, but it's a great scene, like such a good scene from Sandra Oh. As per always, she's the best. She's so
yeah.
talented.
And that reel that you made was very, yes. very good.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So yeah, great scene. Just a great scene. And Meredith being like there in solidarity, like she tells Derek, we are depressed. We have the dark and twisties, whatever. And Derek just being like, okay. I understand. It's fine. So I love it. I love their relationship. She comforts her.
Oh, I thought you were talking for a second about how you love Derek and Meredith's relationship.
No.
All right. We are going to take a quick moment for a break for our regional sponsors, and we'll be back after these messages. And we are back. You know what we forgot to talk about with the Percy Jackson lightning thief and Izzy Stevens? When she drops the coffee on his fucking shoes.
Good for her.
So dope.
Also, we didn't talk about how the HR lady like gave Richard a pre-written speech. And she's like, Megan is suing us because you fired her. And she's saying that we fired her because she's pregnant. So you have to say these words verbatim. And so then when he tries to like talk to Izzy, the HR lady's like, say your speech.
Dr. Weber, you have a pre-recorded line that we need you to go ahead and just press Literally. The button right here.
Yeah.
All right. So... Also, there's that scene where Alex goes to Weber and he's like, look, you know, if you have to make any more cuts, just don't let it be Izzy.
Yeah. He tells Izzy, like, oh, Alex said something to me, which is misleading.
Yeah. Because he doesn't do that. He's fighting for her.
Yeah.
Because he cares about her. And she left him a fucking note on a piece of paper.
And also... when Alex goes to tell Meredith and Christina that Izzy left. We didn't talk about that scene. Just a good scene. Alex,
do you
like,
want to talk about
cries.
Do you want to talk about that now?
Yeah.
And then we could talk about Alex and Reed. And then we'll wrap
Luke,
up this episode.
Luke Danes' sister?
Who?
The daughter of that guy is Luke Steiner's sister in Gilmore Girls.
The daughter of the guy. Mm-hmm. Oh, the blonde lady.
Yeah.
Luke Steiner has a sister?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, Jess has to have a mom.
Who's Jess?
Jess Mariano, Luke's nephew.
Who's that? Is that Rocky Balboa's son?
Yes.
Oh.
You're learning.
Wait, Rocky Balboa's son is related to Luke Steiner?
Yeah, it's his nephew.
Whoa. And his name is Jess?
Yeah.
Wow. Short for Jessica?
Yes. How did you know?
I was at a store the other day making a return, and there was a woman named Carmen who rung me out. And I told her, I said, you have the best name in this whole building. You know that? And she goes, oh, why'd you say that? And I said, because it's my name. And she's like, no, it's not. And I go, no, it is. It is.
It is.
All right. I need to watch Gilmore Girls.
Yes, you do.
Not just the revival.
Not just the revival. The revival might also mean a lot more if you watch the show first.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically, Alex comes in and he's like, Izzy left. They're like, what are you talking about? She's like, she got fired and she left me this note and she left me and I don't know where she went and I don't know when she's coming back. And Meredith tells Christina to get up and hug Alex and she stands up and then Alex just kind of backs up a little bit and it's like brutal. I don't know why, yeah. But it's just really so, so sad. And then they all three just like stand there staring at each other and then the episode ends.
So number one, it's just funny because Meredith had to tell Christina multiple times, like, just go fucking hug him. Go do it. I think if she would have got up the first time, he would have let her hug him.
I don't know. If it was Meredith, yes. But because it's Christina, I think it's just weird. It's a weirder relationship.
That's fair. I really don't know where she is. And I didn't catch the first time. So this does change my prediction a little bit. I didn't realize that he didn't know where she's going. I thought it was just, we're done. And she was leaving him.
No, he's like, I don't know where she is.
Yeah, I didn't catch that the first time. Scary stuff. If I come home to a note one day and Jessica's gone, I don't know what I'll do.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
But she doesn't listen to this podcast, so she'll never know that.
So she'll do it because she doesn't know that you don't know what you'll do.
No, Jessica, don't leave me. Oh, goodness. But he has a good back and forth in this episode with Reed. Kind of they have this like kind of entertaining sparring in the episode. It's at the expense of that patient.
Yeah. And we see some unprofessional shit in this show, but this is arguably one of the worst times. They are just yelling. They're in front of the patient, like, I'm not going to show you his chart. That's bad medicine.
Yeah. Yeah, that was not a good look. And also, the lady, Luke Steiner's sister, sees that multiple times. And I'm surprised she lasted that long. Because at the end, she's like, hey, this may be some shit that I don't know what's going on here for you two, but for me, this is my dad. So can you get your fucking crap together? Put your shit in a backpack and get your shit together.
Yeah. Leave it at the door, guys. This is not the vibe. It was also surprising to me that it took her as long as it did. They are just bickering back and forth. They are using this man as a pawn in their games. And it's unprofessional. And also, like, literally just such bad doctoring. So she finally calls him out on it, but it's like a back and forth. And then they're like not catching things that need to be caught. They can't treat him because they keep making a plan, but they're not telling each other the whole story. And then they take him down for a CT or an MRI, some scan. And Alex is like, you know what? I'm done. You can tell neuro. The head of neuro is Arizona Robbins. And then he just leaves. And then Reed is like, that's not the head of neuro, is it? And the tech is like, no.
Which is funny. Because he's like, look, the patient just yelled at us. Are we putting our stuff aside or not? Okay, now that you see me taking the high road,
I will go talk to this person.
Yes, exactly. But the thing that really sucked is Reed took the patient from Alex, but Alex was handing the patient around as it was his. So then Hunt comes in and goes, hey, Reed caught this shit that you didn't. This is neurological. Alex, why do you suck dick? And he's like, well, I don't know the answer to that. But Reed misjudges the side of the brain that the carotid stenosis is. So that was when thing kind of hit the fan. But does he live? I don't know. Is this?
Yeah.
What's the wrap up on this?
There was a resolution for this man. Adrenal Yeah, adrenal mass, carotid stenosis, expressive aphasia, subdural hematoma, tumor resection, carotid endotector ectomy.
A lot of shit.
An MRI.
And it does not end well.
MRI revealed a subdural hematoma. Yeah, that's all. Like, they don't, we don't see a course of treatment for that one. So, yeah, bad episode for them. They both look like shit. Shit doctors, shit people. Not a good look for either of them.
No, not at all. Really not setting the tone high for this Seattle Grace Mercy West Hospital merger.
Yeah.
But that's all really I had on the notes on that. It is crazy that they were using him, like you said, as a pawn in that game back and forth. Anytime, it's like when parents are getting a divorce and the kids are become the pawns in that. Yeah. And they're always trying to win over the kids. But they weren't trying to win over the patient. They were just trying to win against each other.
Yeah.
So that was a bummer. But I don't really have any other notes there. I'm hoping that they can move on. But here's the thing. It took how long for Alex and Christina to get to a point to not fuck over each other?
Yeah.
Seasons. So I'm not holding my breath for the Alex and Reed storyline anytime soon. Yeah. Although, how much of a twist of writing would it be if they end up getting together and getting married? Actually, that's my official prediction. Okay. Reed and Alex get married.
Reed and Alex get married. Alrighty. When does that happen?
Season 12.
Okie dokie.
It's a long, slow burn.
Slow, long game.
Because it took us 6 seasons for Alex and Izzy. So 6 more seasons.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so next, should we do the Callie scene stuff now?
Is there anything else before we round out with Callie? I really don't think there's anything else.
I don't think so.
Then I would like you to take it away with Callie, but I'd like to say one thing first. Mm-hmm. 2 words. Arizona Robbins. So fucking cool in this episode. Damn. Like, Callie is also super dope, but, like, Arizona, what the fuck? This is out of nowhere. She's just all of a sudden creeping up as one of my favorite characters on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If they kill her, if she gets shot by Hunt in his rage, I will be so annoyed.
In the next episode?
In the next episode. Yes, I'll be so mad.
Okay, so Hector is the actor who plays Callie's father, shows back up.
Hector.
What's Callie's dad's actual name? It's not Hector. Is it Hector?
The security guard of Genovia.
Yeah. Carlos is his name. So he shows back up and she's so excited and he's like, you know, I miss you. And they hug and then she sees the priest. She's like, why is the priest here? Well, why do you think? The priest has come to, quote, pray away the gay. Or attempt to pray away the gay, I guess. And so, essentially, that's shitty. Also, side note, the actual Pope just said that same-sex marriage is allowed. So, he talks to God. Is what I'm told. I don't know the Pope, but I'm told he talks to God. So, Carlos shows up with the priest and Callie is not thrilled and she's like railing to Arizona about it. And Arizona makes the point to say, why don't you sit and talk to him? Because, like, if you look at it strategically, you are the person that has changed. He's been consistent. Like, and Callie's like, well, what about when you came out to your parents? And she's like, I never dated boys. I had a poster of Cindy Crawford on my wall. I was not looking at her mole and they were not surprised Jeez. When I brought home a woman. So she's like, I don't. And what I like is she doesn't sit and say, she's not like, well, he's right. you shouldn't be gay. She's like, just sit down and talk to him and like give him a moment to digest, because like this is the situation from where he's standing. And Callie's like, I hate you. And Arizona's like, yes, because I'm correct.
Dope. Which, and I feel on a spiritual level. People hate me because I'm always right. And
I hate you because I'm always right.
And that's why
it's exhausting. Like, if you could take the burden and be right some of the time, I would love it.
Listen, everyone out here listening to the show knows how I am always right. Everyone listening to the show, they message me all the time going, hey, like, I know that Kelsey gives you a lot of a hard time, but we know you're always right.
No one.
Every single person who's listened to the show ever once has messaged me that.
No one says that to you.
Every single person has.
Okay, so
everyone listening on Patreon right now, I need to blow up the Discord and I need you all to just say, Carmen, you're always right. Kelsey, you're always wrong.
I feel like no one's going to say that.
If they don't, then I quit this podcast.
That's untrue.
I have no leverage in this situation.
So anyways, so Callie agrees to sit with Carlos and the priest. And originally, this scene was written that Carlos just starts reciting scripture, but the actor Hector is like, I think it makes more sense that my character would have this written down on index cards. And so that's what they ended up going with. So they have him have them on index cards, and they have Callie just quoting it off the top of her head. I love this scene. The scene is so memorable. I think about this all the time. I think this is one of like the standout scenes in Grey's Anatomy. Definitely a standout scene for Callie, obviously. So they're sitting there and basically he says like, you're going to hell. And the priest even says like, let's not bring hell into this. And then
first rule of, holy intervention. We do not talk about hell right off the bat.
Yeah. And I will say this also to the priest's credit, when he pulls out the index cards and just starts quoting the Bible verses, the priest says, this is not what we discussed. So I will say, at least to that, it doesn't really seem like there was a lot of communication on what they were doing. I think maybe the priest just thought he was there for moral support. And he was like, this is not what we were going to do. This was not the vibe. So Callie is basically like, you flew 3,000 miles to tell me I'm going to hell. I thought you were going to apologize. And he says, I can't apologize. I don't understand what happened or where I went wrong. Shitty thing to say. And that's when he starts saying, Leviticus, thou shall not lie with a man as one lies with a female. And she says, don't quote the Bible at me. And he says, it is an abomination. The outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and their sin is exceedingly grave. And Callie's, Jesus, a new commandment that I give unto you, that you love one another. Carlos, Romans, but we know the law. Callie, Jesus, he who is without sin among you, let him cast the first stone. Her dad says, so you admit it's a sin. Callie, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Jesus, blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God. Jesus, blessed are those who have been persecuted for righteousness' sakes, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Jesus is my savior, daddy, not you. And Jesus would be ashamed of you for judging me. He would be ashamed of you for turning your back on me. He would be ashamed. So good.
So good.
Let me get on my second soapbox.
Can I preface your soapbox with just a very quick soapbox of mine? I love Jesus. I go to church every Sunday. I play in the team for music. I sing and I play guitar every Sunday. Never once would I ever, ever judge someone. And it is not right for them to be judged on sexuality, to not be accepted. I understand that is a very old, like, I'm not going to say that this is just boomers, because there's also some not progressive and very non-understanding young people who I have met. I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago, where literally someone in my family was praising Ron DeSantis for his anti-LGBTQ+ stances in political sense. That is not okay. And the thing that really hits home with me with the Callie thing is when she said, like, every time that I'm sitting there and I'm thinking through any kind of religious stance or trying to work through that in my own standpoint, it's the let he who is without sin cast the first stone. I suck. Like, I am not perfect. I may always be right, but I'm not perfect. no. But,
I wasn't going to say anything, but now.
Yeah. Actually, come to think of it, I'm going to start casting some stones. No. It's like the pro-life, pro-choice thing, the gay marriage thing, the gay rights thing. It's just such, it sucks so much that when people hear the word religion or people hear about God and Jesus, that these are the kind of things that they think about. And right. I don't like that because mm-hmm. I am not either of those things. And I know so many people who go to my church who are pro-LGBTQ+, pro-choice. And I also know a lot of people who are in same-sex relationships and marriages who also love some Jesus, right? Yeah. So, like, ah, man, this was just such a good scene, and I'm really excited to hear your soapbox now, too. So I just wanted to make sure that everyone knows, like, yes, these things suck, and these things are real, and these conversations, like, do happen within families. Not condoning that, but just know that I think that from what I see on the inside of the religious world, even in a small microcosm of the bubble that I exist in, I think that there are generations, and clearly with the Pope's announcement the other day of being able to bless same-sex marriages and relationships, yeah. Like, I think that the world is changing in a good way, and I'm very excited about things like that. So,
yeah.
That's my stance. I'd love to know your thoughts too.
So my soapbox is specifically for the Bible verse that is most often used to condemn gay marriage. It is the Leviticus one where he says, "Thou shalt not lie with a man the way one lies with a woman." This, I've done a lot of reading on research that's been done on the linguistics of this, and the translation that we have in English is the only one that reads that way. If you ask any other biblical scholar or linguistic scholar outside of the English language how it translates to young boy. So it is essentially saying, do not be a pedophile because it's an abomination, which I would agree with. I would say that's not a hot take. I don't think you should do that. Don't abuse children. And for some reason, I mean, historically speaking, before the church super got into politics, the church was more pro-choice. The church was more accepting of gay people. And then at some point down the line, there was a politician who wanted to get the church involved, and they needed to get the church involved. And it was going to be on the conservative side. And they leveraged a lot of things to their cause. And it was unfortunate. And it, to your point, it does paint a broad picture of anyone in the Christian religion that I don't think is true across the board, but a lot of people unfortunately have had that experience, and it's really unfortunate. But if you're at all, I mean, it is not hard to find these. I mean, I've read like several different, I don't even want to say articles, 'cause it's more like educational materials for like linguistic studies. That's what I was reading more of, because they're written by other linguistics professors and people who study linguistics and translations. But they're at the same time, they're people specifically in the religious studies of it, like people who study different translations of the Bible and, you know, where it came from, Latin and Rome and Greek and all these different languages that funnel down into what we know where we're speaking English. But I just want to say that specific Bible verse really irks me when it gets used, because it is mistranslated with the intention of being harmful to a minority group of people. And let me tell you, I don't think Jesus would much care for that.
I think I would have to agree. I think in this situation, Kelsey, you're right.
I think you are, man.
Well, I guess it's my opinion.
You were also right.
Thank you.
But yeah, that was my second soapbox. Is it's just really not difficult to find this information. And it was like later in like the back half of the 1900s that was even translated that way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really don't think the people that listen to this podcast need to be convinced of this. I think most people who listen to this probably agree with us. But if you're looking for resources to have conversations with other people, they are available, and I we understand your plight of having these conversations, especially if it's with family members that you disagree with. And especially this time of year, things can get heated at the family gatherings.
Around the Christmas table. Yeah.
So
there's also something to be said about, it's not your life, so what the fuck, who cares, you know? And that's how I feel about so many topics in, we don't have to go down this rabbit hole. I think we've said a lot of our piece, and I feel good about that. The people who've listened to this podcast now for multiple years and are on this journey know where we stand. So I feel good about that. My favorite part of that whole scene, though, is the quote from the priest at the end when he says, "Pardon my language, but what the fuck just happened?" That's my favorite part of the whole scene.
That was a good part. That was a good twist from the priest, from Father Kevin.
Father Kevin. So do you have the dialogue pulled up of Arizona at all?
Yeah, I can get to it. When she goes to him.
Yeah. Yeah. We get this scene.
Well, first, hold on really quick. Okay, There's the quick scene where Callie is crying and Arizona finds her. And Callie's like, at least now I know that I can like stop having contact with him because I don't need a father, not one who doesn't support me. And Arizona doesn't really say anything. She just kind of comforts her. So that happens. And then Arizona goes to Carlos.
So I want to let you know, listeners and Kelsey, that this scene with Arizona definitely made me emotional. Mm-hmm. And this whole storyline in general made me emotional as a father to a daughter, which is very emotional. But I didn't have a full on cry, but there was
some feels
where there were some misty eyes taking place that if Arizona kept talking could have turned into full blown tears. But it was the last line, and we'll get to that in a second. So if you got that dialogue, go ahead and throw it up.
So Carlos, Arizona approaches Carlos and he says, "I don't know you well enough to talk about her. We're not going to do that." She says, "Most people think that I was named for the state, but it's not true. I was named for a battleship, the USS Arizona. My grandfather was serving on the Arizona when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and he saved 19 men before he drowned. Pretty much everything my father did his whole life was about honoring that sacrifice. I was raised to be a good man in a storm, raised to love my country, love my family, and protect the things that I love. When my father, Colonel Daniel Robbins of the United States Marine Corps, heard that I was a lesbian, he only had one question. I was prepared for how fast can you get the hell out of my house, but instead it was, are you still who I raised you to be? My father believes in country the way you believe in God, and my father is not a man who bends, but he bent for me because I'm his daughter. I am a good man in a storm. I love your daughter and I protect the things I love. Not that I need to. She doesn't need it. She is strong and caring and honorable, and she is who you raised her to be." I just got goosebumps.
Yeah. When she said that my father is not a man who bends, but he bent for me, I was like, fucking daggers. That was the line. But yeah, it's so good. And honestly, I don't think I ever. Also, it was her grandfather was in Pearl Harbor, not her father, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, her grandfather was. Yeah. So when she says that she was named after the battleship that sunk, not the state, in my head, I'm thinking, oh, I know history and I know the significance of the Arizona battleship, and I hope to someday go to Hawaii to see it in Pearl Harbor. But this character has never in my head made those connections. So it was really cool to hear that. And then the end scene with her, with Callie and her dad. Do you have that too?
Yes. He finds her when she's leaving the hospital and she's like, "I can't do this. You can see me in hell." And he says, "Listen, I have to catch you." And she says, "What? Your whole life, you've always been on a bridge, Calliope, ever since you were a little girl. And you don't just walk on it either. You climb the railing and you're ready to leap. And when you do, when it happens, I have to be there. I have to catch you." And she said, "You don't have to catch me." And he says, "Yes, I do. It's my job." And then he says, "If this works out between you and Arizona, is there a chance that maybe you'd give your mother a wedding?" So like that's kind of Callie's first clue that he's coming around. Like,
yeah.
His view has shifted. She says, if Arizona wanted to spend the rest of her life with me, yeah, I'll put on a big white dress and dance down the aisle. And he says, how about grandkids? And she said, yes, I would imagine when the time came, there would be kids. And he says, does she make you happy? And Kelly said, yes, Dad, she makes me very happy. And they hug. And she says, I love you. And he says, she's not a vegetarian, is she? Because I don't know how much more I can take.
Which is exactly where my head would be if I went through the first arc before this.
And then he goes, I feel very old. And I'm like, okay, boomer.
Yeah.
But it is nice that it ends on a happier note. That Callie doesn't seem to be so shunned anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It's honestly, that's the funny thing is I would be more concerned about the person's dietary restrictions over I don't give a shit if you're gay, you know? Gosh, that's so funny. Also, I have dated both a vegetarian and I've dated a vegan, and clearly I didn't end up with either of them.
Yeah, Jessica loves her some bacon.
Yeah, she loves her some beef, jerky, stick meat, penis.
Stop.
Okay.
Thought I was gonna beat you to it.
I made some steak the other night, and I did it on the grill. And the steak, I must need to clean that grill because it caught fire.
Oh, good.
The steak caught fire.
Yeah, I would clean the grill.
Yeah, I just need a new one. I just need a new grill.
No, you can just clean it.
No. This is the cheap gas grill that we bought just to get us through this year. Like, we did this with the intention of getting a nicer grill next year.
Isn't the Traeger a grill?
The Traeger is my smoker. This was a grill. This
Isn't
was
it also a grill?
It's different. You can't really get the char like with a gas grill with an
so
open
flame.
So it
is a grill. You're just not using it as a grill.
I'm using it as a smoker.
Because it is a grill. And you just opt not to utilize it that way.
How about predictions and rating this episode?
Do you have anything else? I feel like we didn't talk about Meredith. I mean, she's not there that much, but
she became kind of like this. This was the first episode that she really kind of was like this pseudo leader of the show. Like, I think they're finally starting to lean into this is Grey's Anatomy because of Meredith Grey. And I think it's pretty cool. That's pretty cool that they're leaning into that. That was my note for her, but Cali, Arizona, and the security guard from Genovia stole this episode, in my humble opinion. Very great acting, just incredible storyline, quick and intense arc, and I'm a big fan. That was nice, but yeah, what any final thoughts you have before we rate and predict?
No, I don't think so. I'm going through everything, but I think we touched on everything.
The scene when they were in the lunch table and they're looking around and the slow realization of, wait, none of them are in the cafeteria. And then they go, oh my God, they don't eat lunch.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Well, let's rate it. You can go first.
All right. I have two ratings for this one. Objectively, looking at this episode, from my perspective, it's like a 3.2.
Oh my God, that's so
hold low. Hold on. Because I know that it's setting up a lot more, using my deductive reasoning skills and knowing that we're about to go through this gigantic change with the merger and everything, I'm going to give it a 4. I did not love this episode. This episode is just okay. But it made me excited to see what is coming next. So it's at a 4 for me.
There's some pretty great performances in this episode.
Right, but like there was also some people that it introduced me to who I don't like very much right now.
Okay, I'm gonna say it's a 4.4. Really good performances from Callie, from her dad, from Arizona, from Christina specifically. I mean, I don't love Izzy, but I think the way that Katherine Heigl played the part where she's getting fired was really well done. You can see a lot of emotion on her face.
You know what? I'm thinking I unfairly rated this episode lower. I think I just want to remove the 3.2 and give it the 4.
Okay.
Because you're right. There were good performances. I think I was just, there wasn't like any super big drama. It was a emotional story, personal relationship heavy episode.
Sure. Yeah.
So I'm going to take the 3.2 out of the equation. I'm going to give it just a 4.
Okay.
Is that okay? Can everyone out there stop yelling and throwing their stuff at the TVs and their phones and their radios, please?
I'll allow it. So predictions. we'll predict something with the people that we've met, like Reed, Jackson, April, and Charlie.
So my prediction so far is just that Jackson and Reed are going to make it long term. I don't think that April and Charles stick around very long. Okay. My thought process is, have they only done the first round of cuts from Seattle Grace and all of the Mercy West cuts have already been done? Or are we going to slowly continue to get cuts from both sides now that they're all in one building? That part is still unclear to me. So I have a feeling that maybe the people we're being introduced to are going to get cut somehow still, but I don't know. Okay. I don't fully understand.
So what's your timeline on if Charlie and April leave? What is your timeline on them leaving?
By the end of the season. I think that all the cuts that we'll have from the merger will be done. This whole season, I think all of season 6 is going to be about the merger. So people who are going to come into the show or be leaving the show will be done for merger specific reasons will be done by the end of season 6.
Okay.
So I don't know if we'll get a new cardio god right away.
Okay, that was my next thing.
But it will be within that one's going to be more imminent. That one probably seems like they need a head of cardio fairly soon.
Yeah.
So I think next episode we're going to get introduction to the head of cardio, but it's only because the bullet that Hunt shoots goes through two hearts, one of which is April's.
Okay. And anything with Christina and Owen other than he's shooting?
After the shooting, they'll have another episode where she's in therapy with him.
Okay. And then anything? Oh, Alex and Izzy.
I really have a hard time believing that Izzy is completely gone. Alex and Izzy are going to have a face-to-face interaction before she leaves.
When?
Next episode.
Okay.
Or the episode within the next two episodes.
Okay. I don't know. Do you have anything else to predict? Because I don't really know if I have anything else to ask.
I don't know. How long is Meredith bedridden, though?
I think it's just these two episodes, if I remember correctly. I think she's up and about next time, but I don't 100% know if that's true.
All right. Well, no, that's all I got. Why don't you close us out and take it away, my friend?
Okie dokie. Thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure you are following us all the places. You can email me at graysacademypod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram, on TikTok, and Twitter at Grey's Academy Pod. You can follow us individually at chaoticallykelsey, carmen.gabriel.official. And you can leave us a rating and a review, and you can join us on Patreon as well. We will also keep you updated on the website progress. And I think that's it. Thank you guys so much for listening. Pretty please continue to share us with all of your friends and family. Tell people, you know, it's the new year. People are going to be looking for a new podcast. Be like, oh, you looking for a new podcast? Here's one. Have this one. Listen to it. It's great. And so, yeah, thank you guys for listening. And remember, if you see Carmen walking down the street,
just remember, no spoilies, no spoilers. Don't even think about it. Do take a picture with me. Do take a selfie. Do wish me a happy holiday. Whatever holiday you celebrate, I want you to know that I want to celebrate that with you. And as always, we appreciate you listening so much. And we will see you all in the next one. And have a Merry Christmas, everyone. If it's coming from, if you celebrate Christmas, have a Merry Christmas, because that's the next holiday immediately that we will have. But I think there's, hold on, pulling this up. We've got Christmas and we have Kwanzaa back to back. That's the day after. Yeah. So before the next podcast comes out, both of those will be celebrated. So we wish you both of those to be merry and bright, and we will see you all in the next one.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.